This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Indiana State Police are investigating an alleged racial profiling incident that happened on Saturday at the State House. It is where a State Capitol Police officer reportedly prepared to unholster and draw his gun while yelling at State Senator Eddie Melton of Gary. And we should tell you that Indiana State Democratic Party has issued some comments as well about all this. But we have with us the person who was an eyewitness to the incident that was reported and reported on later by the State Democratic Party. Belinda Drake is a state Senate candidate in Indianapolis. And she and colleagues, including Senator Melton, were on hand for all of this. And she is with us on the phone from Indianapolis today. And Belinda, thank you very much for joining us here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Let me start out, if I may, by letting everyone know that Senator Melton had some comments. He had a prepared statement that came out with the Indiana State Democrats news release. And he deferred any further comment, I think, until the investigation by the state is complete on this. And this is what Senator Melton had to say. He says, quote, "It's unfortunate this situation had to take place. Senator Ford and I had already had reached out to President Pro Tem Roderick Bray and Lieutenant Beeman about the matter, and we are addressing this internally in a more formal process. The only reason that I'm releasing a public statement is because attendants of the rally have already begun sharing an account of the incident on social media. I quote, I want to be clear that I don't want the situation to become a distraction from the work that we're doing through the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus on our police reform agenda." And that's end of quote. That is what Senator Eddie Melton is having to say about this. And Ms. Drake, if you will, set the stage and give us an idea of what had happened last Saturday at the State House and how this incident has seems to have at least grown to the situation just now with the allegations of racial profiling.
We were just at an event for the Black Voices in Politics here in the state of Indiana. And it was a beautiful event. And then towards the second part of the event, it started to hail really bad. So it was a really bad thunderstorm that we had to respond to. And we all did in a professional fashion enter into the State House. And what appeared to have happened was that Senator Ford and Senator Melton were basically approached by a state trooper that was headed towards the crowd just to politely intervene and try to have a conversation. What we do know is that if Senator Ford were not there, we don't know what would have really happened because it seems as if he was able to de-escalate the situation from going any further.
Mm-hmm. I know that Senator Melton is Black, and Senator Ford is white. In fact, he's from Indianapolis, holds one of the Senate district seats in the Indianapolis area, well-known and well-respected by his colleagues, as is Senator Melton in the Indiana Senate, and he's very well-known in central Indiana politics for what he has done there as well. I'm sure that probably what comes to mind is, besides the storm, which caught everybody by surprise and everybody wanted to get out of the rain, out of the thunderstorm in particular, how did it turn out that Senators Ford and Melton have an opportunity to have access to the State House? Because, number one, it's a weekend. It's usually closed up unless they're in General Assembly's in session. And number two, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic basically closed everything up, especially with state offices. How did the two senators have access to the building that allowed the people to come in?
I'm not a current senator. I am a candidate. I think that that's a question that you would have to ask them directly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to misspeak for any of my future colleagues.
Okay. I didn't know if they had a key or electronic key or whatever to be able to get in. I guess because it was such short notice, they obviously couldn't call ahead and say, "Hey, we're stuck outside. Please let us in."
And I think that at the end of the day, it's extremely concerning how Senator Melton, being the Black senator, was treated in the situation in comparison to Senator Ford. That's what I think is really the most concerning part about all of this, that as we continue to think that we've made it really far here in Indiana, we still have so much further to go. And at the end of the day, it didn't matter that Senator Melton is an elected official. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter that he was being responsible by at least trying to talk with the trooper. It didn't matter. None of that mattered, that he was cooperating and following the process. The unfortunate part is that he was treated with aggression from the trooper in comparison to how generous Senator Ford was treated. It's just an extreme concern that we continue to have here, and it just goes back to the systemic issues that we have in the state of Indiana when it comes to racial profiling with our Black community. And I think that that's where we really need to pay close attention to, how did we even get in this situation? Why are the systems still in place? Systemic racism continues to be an issue here in the state of Indiana. That's the actual focus, is that this is why we need to focus on reform. This is why we need to really take a step back and focus on addressing systemic racism and why we can't ignore it.
We're talking with Belinda Drake. She is a Democrat and is a candidate for legislative office in central Indiana. And she, along with Senators Eddie Melton and J.D. Ford and a number of other people who are attending a rally outside the State House on Saturday, got literally caught in the rain, and they were looking for shelter to get out of the storm. And that is where this incident happened last Saturday. I know that obviously, besides your concern and that you've stated here about the likelihood of some problems that, of course, come out in systemic racism through the use of racial profiling by law enforcement, you also, as a campaigner, are looking that if you are elected, you want to make some changes. Will you talk for a moment about that?
Yeah, and I think that once I get elected to state senate to represent Indiana Senate District 32, I plan to join my colleagues in the Black Legislative Caucus to bring forth bold change, bold solutions, and bills that require us to address the systemic racism that continues to get passed through racist policies and racist bills. And that, at this point, it requires us to take a look at our de-escalation training for law enforcement officers. And I'll be committed to doing that work once I do get elected this November.
Now, you are a native of Northwest Indiana. You were born and raised in Gary. You've been living in central Indiana for some time. But can you tell us if you've had any personal experiences or knowledge of problems that you've experienced while you're up here in Lake County, living in Lake County?
I want to say that my mom did a great job of protecting us growing up, and my family and the community did a great job of keeping us protected, and at an early age just teaching us what it means to be safe and Black in Indiana. And that's the best way that I can answer that one.
Is there anything that you're likely to see come about from this? As we mentioned earlier at the outset of our conversation, that Senator Melton said he's asked for an investigation. He's alerted his colleagues and leaders in the Indiana Senate about the issue, and the investigation is underway. Don't know how long that's going to take. That's up to the state police, because they are responsible for the Capitol Police, or responsible for the investigation. If anything comes about here, what do you hope it might be?
I think that I'm hopeful for change in the state of Indiana, and starting including the district that I'm going to represent come November. Mm-hmm. I believe that we can do better, and that we will do better in addressing the law enforcement reform here in the state of Indiana. And I plan to be part of that conversation and lead for my district once I do get elected. But I am extremely hopeful that this situation continues to remind everyone involved that we really need to address the systemic problems in the state of Indiana. And furthermore, we need to really look at our law enforcement reform, just so that not just my communities in Senate District 32, but all Hoosiers are treated correctly, and that justice is always served, whether it's in Senate District 32 or up north in the region.
Are you hopeful that the Indiana State Black Legislative Caucus, of which Senator Melton is a member, will be able to have some input, certainly, and some leeway to be able to get some things done?
Oh, yeah. I am extremely hopeful and confident in the Black Legislative Caucus that Senator Melton is a part of. They have been trying to work with the current administration to get some of these issues addressed. And I know that they'll continue to do the work, and I look forward to joining the Black Legislative Caucus once I get elected this November to continue to be a voice and to work with them to get some real changes done in the state of Indiana.
I know that in his comments that Senator Ford had mentioned that he felt it was also unfortunate that the incident should happen. I called it unfortunate irony that a good friend and colleague experienced some of the same police bias that they were there to speak out against. And I know that that Senator Melton was wearing, he was in, both of them, of course, were in civilian clothes, not in suit and tie, not as they would be dressed if they were at the General Assembly for session. And they were just, in fact, in the case of Senator Melton, he was wearing a black I Can't Breathe T-shirt, which we've all seen and know about. Do you think, in your opinion, that if he'd been dressed in suit and tie as looking like the legislative official that he is, that things might be end up different?
I think that the fact that we have to even address this type of ideology is concerning itself. At the end of the day, regardless of whether you're elected or not, black individuals should be treated with respect in all spaces.
Once again, Senator Melton is deferring any further comment other than the statement that was put out in the joint news release between himself and State Senator J.D. Ford about the report of the incident that happened in Indianapolis on Saturday. And we'll defer to Senator Melton if he feels when the investigation is done, he'd have more to tell us, and we hope so. Thank you very much, Belinda, for talking with us today about the incident that happened in Indianapolis.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you so much for continuing to share positive news and to also hear that we are hopeful for change here in the state of Indiana.
Belinda Drake is a native of Northwest Indiana, of Gary, and she is also a candidate for state Senate seat in Indianapolis. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. The Lake County Plan Commission is going to hold a public hearing on July 15th to talk about an amended ordinance that, if it's passed, approved, put into county law, would require public hearings for such things as solar panel farm projects. Bill Emerson, who is the county surveyor, is the chairman of the Lake County Plan Commission, and he is with us to talk about the project and about the idea in general. And Bill, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
First, if you will, tell us a little bit about this particular project that is sparking the idea of wanting to make the changes in the ordinance that what the public hearing coming up on July 15th is all about.
Well, it's actually the hearing coming up on the 15th is for an ordinance that's going to that would apply to any development. Right now, our only way that our ordinance, our zoning ordinance, addresses solar. Anything solar is for like personal use for houses and things like that. So
yeah.
We kind of realized that we needed to update it to make it make so that there's a way for some of these larger scale developments to be done in the county. That there's a way that the public can be notified of it when those things want to come here.
Is it more like an individual homeowner wants to put up panels on the roof or whatever, and you have to get a special exception to be able to do that?
That's what we have now.
Yeah,
it really just addresses that. But this ordinance would address the larger scale solar fields that are proposed in many areas of the country.
Mm-hmm. I know there is one company in particular out of Chicago, Inver Energy. is interested in setting something up here in Lake County. Can you tell us what you know about this project and why this seems to have caught a lot of attention these days?
Yeah, so I think they're definitely interested, I think, in coming to the area. And like I said, right now, there's no real procedure for it that is really detailed enough for our liking. Like, so there are certain things that in this proposed ordinance that I think are really good, as far as making sure that there's a plan to decommission these fields when they reach the end of their life. Things like making sure that the glare from the solar panels doesn't affect anyone or any traffic or anything like that. Drainage issues and kind of visual screening around the property, things like that are addressed in this ordinance that we want to make sure were in place.
Now, did the company come forth before the Plan Commission, or at least talk about this? And I'm sure they've at least talked with the Plan Commission staff, like Ned Kovacevic, who's the director of the mm-hmm. Plan Commission, about what they want to do. Did they, I guess, have such an ambitious plan that it maybe realized maybe we ought to step back and take a better look at all of these?
Yeah, that's right. And I don't know that they're the only company that will be doing that, but it's something that's happening more and more kind of across the area and the country, and that we want to make sure we had the ordinance in place to handle it, I guess.
I understand that the county commissioners had asked a consultancy team to come in and take a better look at this. What have they mentioned that you're aware of that they brought up before the Plan Commission about the concept of doing some changes in the rules to allow the solar panel farms to be placed?
Well, and that's a good point. So we are in the middle of kind of redrafting our zoning ordinance for Lake County, which would apply to the unincorporated areas. And so it's kind of actually good timing in a way, because with kind of all these talks coming, and it was something we were going to address anyway in our draft. So this is a way that we can kind of use some of the work that we've done, the redraft of the zoning ordinance, and get it in place right now.
Now, Bill, tell us what this July 15th meeting is going to be all about. How is it structured? What can the public do? And especially now, because we still are dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, how is it going to be conducted?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, so it's the 15th at 5:30 p.m. at the Government Center. We will be social distancing and limiting the amount of people that can be in the room at one time. So if there are more people that show up that want to speak, we'll have to rotate people out to stay safe. And everyone has to wear a mask in the Government Center and socially distance themselves. But mm-hmm. We had one meeting live last month, and it went really well, and people were very respectful and made sure that they were careful. So
that's good.
We expect that to happen again.
That's good. Now, once you have this July 15th public hearing to take a look at the ordinance, what is going to be the procedure after that that you know that has to be set up before the Plan Commission?
Yes, then it will go to the Board of Zoning Appeals for their review, and then to the council. Where the council can pass it or amend it or do what they see fit to do.
You mentioned that we only know right now of one company that is really interested in doing this type of work for a solar farm project, and there may be more ahead. Is there, I guess, some idea, and obviously, but since this is an opportunity to make the changes in the zoning codes to be able to allow for more, are there any other options that maybe are out there with clean energy in mind that may possibly be coming up in some form or another someday before the Plan Commission?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm personally open to any clean energy options mm-hmm. for Lake County. I think people realize Lake County is a great place to be and a great place to invest. So hopefully, we do have more investment like that. The big thing for me, and I think for my colleagues on the Plan Commission, is to make sure that the public has a lot of input moving forward with any projects. So I think this proposed ordinance is a good way to do that.
Bill Eberson is county surveyor here in Lake County, and he is also the chairman of the Lake County Plan Commission. And they will be holding a public hearing on July 15th at the County Center in Crown Point to talk about an amended ordinance that would have to be reviewed eventually by the county council that would require public hearings for such things as solar panel farm projects. There is one company that wants to do so here in Lake County, and they want to be sure that the zoning ordinances are allowable to let them do that. This next story comes to you from the Welcome Project at Valparaiso University. The Welcome Project collects first-person stories and pairs these with intentional conversation to help forge stronger ties within and across our communities.
The interesting thing about sports is this, and a lot of people just don't get it. Sports, for the most part, and I mean not absolutely, but for the most part, is how society should be. When athletes get together in competition or in camaraderie as teammates, between those white lines, on that court, on that field of strife, there's a respect. There's sort of a relationship where people get along. There's sportsmanship, for the most part, that's exhibited. It's all the things that are missing in large segments of society. At Gary Roosevelt, the biggest rivalry, I mean a rivalry that probably rivaled the Bears and the Packers, was Gary Roosevelt and Gary Frabel. I guess because the two schools were nearest each other, Gary Roosevelt being on 25th Avenue, Frabel on 15th, and Frabel had a sizable black population at the time. And so it was a natural rivalry, and they were pretty darn good as well. You know, if I see a Frabel guy walk into a room, like Ghostbusters, you put the signs up, you know, beware. I mean, so we have a lot of fun with that. But it was a great rivalry. And what it did was it kind of made both of us, meaning the institutions, better because we tried to outdo each other in every respect. Now, Frabel did have the benefit being in a school that was majority white. And so they had amenities, let's say, some things that we didn't have. But then they had some things working against them, too. They had a certain day where they could swim, the pool had to be drained, and then the pool was made ready for the regular student body and things like that. So we didn't have to encounter those things. Roosevelt and Frabel played. It was not just the Roosevelt fans and the Frabel fans there. It was Gary's folks there to see Roosevelt and Frabel. That was big stuff. And if we were playing one of the all-white schools, their fan base was still there, rivaling our fan base. There was no taunting back and forth, no racial epithets, none of that. I guess it was in that safe haven of sports competition at that particular time. Now, when the game was over and people went to their own segregated neighborhoods or went to wherever else they went, then you deal with whatever the realities of the day was. In football, we could only win the city championship. We were not allowed to go into the state finals and the playoffs and all of that. We couldn't do that. We could do it in basketball, I guess because of basketball being Hoosier hysteria and the state's game and that kind of thing. So there were some institutional racial situations that affected us. I remember my junior year in football. We had to play Lew Wallace at Gilroy Stadium for the city championship. Lew Wallace was a state powerhouse, ranked in the top 10 in the state. He had a great team. Now, Lew Wallace was going to the playoffs, so that was our playoff. That was as much as we can do, and they were heavily favored. I'll never forget. We were in the dressing room. Not only were all of our coaches there, the basketball coaches, the assistant coaches, our principals, they were telling us that we were carrying the banner for Roosevelt High School. They were telling us that people were belittling us. They could outthink us. They were smarter than we were. You know, they were better organized. They were all of these things. I tell you, we went out there on that field with fire in our eyes. I think by the halftime, we had pretty much had their entire starting backfield have to leave the game. We wound up winning the game 25-6, winning the city championship. I can't sit here and tell you that those things that were told to us from a historical perspective did not fuel our performance. But when you look at the kids, the 15, the 16, the 17-year-olds, maybe at that point it just not had been taught and acquired. Lew Wallace High School, Word High School, those schools were all white when I was playing. And we'd stomp them. I mean, you know, we would stomp them. But you know what those guys would do? They'd shake our hands on the court, man. They'd come to watch our practices just to see how we executed. And we'd joke back and forth, laugh and joke, because, you know, at that stage, the racism had not been acquired, hadn't been taught by the adults, or they had not grown up as adults and gone into environments, either work, college, or whatever, where the racism was reinforced. Kids were kids, they were innocent. And again, as I say, with athletes, it was just a whole different kind of bonding.
You can find more regional stories at welcomeproject.valpo.edu. This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Lakeshore Neighborhood Development Corporation Initiative. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us for today. On tomorrow's program, Paige McNulty, her official title is Emergency Manager, running the school district. She's been a very busy person the last few days. We will have her on Regionally Speaking tomorrow to talk about the reopening of the Gary Community School Corporation for in-person learning this fall.